Back together again, you and I chatting it up, sitting down around the wireless on Tuesday, July 30th, 2024 on Connecticut Today. I opened up the show with an update on U.S. Senate passage of the Kids Online Safety Act, co-authored by Connecticut Senator Richard Blumenthal. Quinnipiac University Assistant Professor of Interactive Media Design John Powers also dropped by to weigh in on that bill. Stratford GOP State Senator Kevin Kelly talked about the precarious state of Connecticut's so-called small group insurance market. And we also featured our weekly check-in with the Yankee Institute blogger Megan Portfolio, who talked about another possible special session in Hartford.
So in a matter of days, I guess, we are actually going to find out here if we are actually serious about protecting kids from bullying online from the major social media companies, or will those social media companies, you know, send their lobbyists, many of whom are former members of Congress? Will the social media companies, will the organizations like the American Civil Liberties Union, will they preach that a little bit of control over our kids who are primarily minors, who are not adults yet, that a little bit of control over our kids, we may be told that's a bad thing. We may be told we're an evil society. We may be told that we're bad parents and bad step-parents and grandparents and all this because we don't let every kid access every bit of wretched slop on the internet. And amid all the stuff going on, the world tensions we have in the Middle East and the Far East and the wild and crazy presidential race we have and all the allegations flying left and right and at least one party in this country trying to convince the other half of the country that, you know, Stalin and Hitler are right over the ridge coming at them. We actually have, finally, and it's connected to one of our own members of Congress here in Connecticut, something that Republicans and Democrats and most conservatives and most progressives have actually gotten together on that may actually do some good, thanks in part to two members of the Senate, Republican Marsha Blackburn of Tennessee, hardly a liberal, and Democrat Richard Blumenthal of Connecticut, hardly a conservative, because, yes, it is amazing that both sides can work together on this. An AP story, the Senate today has passed a bill to protect kids online and make tech companies accountable for harmful content. Now, we already have some of these self-appointed white knights in these civil libertarian communities warning, oh, this is going to hurt the LGBT community. This is going to hurt the reproductive community. Park it. I don't care. Because what you're saying is grossly out of line at this point in the progress of this. And you have people on the right saying, oh, the government's going to control speech, this and the other. Oh, calm down, for God's sake. The government's not going to control speech. My God, there are so many different avenues and venues for you to communicate. The government controlling speech? Really? Really? Oh, and by the way, the latest thing as well, Google and the tech companies, they wouldn't allow the sharing of a photo of Donald Trump shot. Who didn't see the photo of Donald Trump shot? Honestly, who with half a brain and access to the internet and the web wasn't able to pull that up? It was the lead story. It still is the lead story now with the hearings today in Washington, the acting director now, with the deputy who took over from the head of the Secret Service. I've seen the picture all day. But how about this? And I start the show with this because this hit me, as something positive. The U.S. Senate votes 91-3. Now think about that. You have 100 men and women in the U.S. Senate, the single most powerful deliberative body on the planet, in some way, shape, or form, people would contend, more powerful than the president, more powerful than the House. Remember that old phrase in government, the House proposes and the Senate oftentimes disposes. But the Senate today, on an overwhelming margin, 91-3, passes a bill designed to protect kids from dangerous online content. It is about damn time. And it would go forward if they can get away from the roaches and the locusts who are going to descend on them from the social media platforms. You can almost hear it coming. If they can push back on some of those lobbyists who, don't get me started. But this would be the first major effort by Congress in decades to hold the tech companies more accountable for harm they cause. The bill passed 91-3. Now ask yourself this. When was the last time you saw anything, save for renaming of a military base, save for naming a post office, save for approving a congressional resolution honoring, you know, some branch of American society? When was the last time anything passed the Senate 91-3? It has been pushed by parents of kids who died by committing suicide after online bullying, or they've otherwise been harmed by online content. This would force companies to take reasonable steps to prevent harm on online platforms frequently used by minors. It would require them to exercise what is called duty of care and ensure that they generally default to the safest settings possible. And I know I'm already hearing from the howls of the Republicans in the House, oh, well, this is going to infringe on free speech. Let me tell you something. As far as I'm concerned, until you're an adult, until you turn 18 and are considered an adult in this country, you don't have free speech. I'm sorry. When they start talking about kids at 10, 11, and 12 being denied their free speech, no, you have free speech to talk to mom, to talk to dad, to talk to your teachers, to talk to Nana and Papa, Grandma and Grandpa. You got plenty of free speech. You can stand out in the schoolyard and scream to the heavens in something you read and write. Nobody's stopping you doing that. But this strange notion we have now that accessing something online, especially if you are a minor, or accessing something in a platform where you may get abused, eventually physically, but at least mentally, and in some way, shape, or form, putting limits on that is cutting down on your free speech. That is the definition of asinine. Now, the House has not acted on the bill, but Speaker Mike Johnson said he is committed to working to find consensus. Supporters are hoping that the strong Senate vote will push the House to act. Now, it wouldn't surprise me in the least bit if you have these self... Oh, I can't wait to see what the House Freedom Caucus does on this. Oh, Tom Massey, the guy that lives out in the woods somewhere, Marjorie Taylor Greene, who embarrasses herself every time she opens her mouth. I got to tell you, you Republicans out there, you better not kill this thing. I don't care how concerned you are about free speech, which is idiotic if a kid's in their teens or a minor. There's an election coming up. This is a good bill that was put together by Richard Blumenthal. I know. Oh, you're saying something good about Dick Blumenthal. Yeah, what's the problem? I don't sit here every Monday through Friday from 2 to 6, where everything is Democrats bad, liberals bad, Republicans good, Republicans wonderful. If you want that, go listen to somewhere. Go listen to somebody else. Go. Is Alex Jones still on? Go listen to him. I don't care. Marsha Blackburn of Tennessee, Republican Richard Blumenthal of Connecticut, saying the message to the big tech companies is that, quote, we no longer to trust you to make decisions for us. The bill would be the first major package to move in years. It could potentially pave the way for other bills strengthening online privacy laws. That's good. Don't conservatives like that? Or set parameters for the growing use of artificial intelligence. Now, you tell me what's so bad about this, because I'm already hearing, well, the House should kill this. This is the government controlling the internet. Hey, pal. Hey, lady. I got news for you. The government could control the internet by flipping one switch. You don't think there's a kill switch to the internet here? Come on. Stop. If the bill becomes law, and it better, because if not, you idiots that may kill it on the Republican side, come on, stop. If the bill becomes law, companies would be required to mitigate harm to kids, including bullying and violence, the promotion of suicide, eating disorders, substance abuse, sexual exploitation, and advertisements for illegal products such as narcotics, tobacco, and alcohol. To do that, social media platforms would have to provide minors with options to protect their information, to disable addictive product features, and opt out of personalized algorithmic recommendations. Imagine that. You and your kids might be able to tell the big tech companies, hey, we're going to see just the basic stuff here. You're not going to learn the patterns of my 12 or 13-year-old kid. They would also be required to limit other users from communicating with kids and limit features that increase, sustain, or extend the use of the platform. Yeah. By the way, did you know that TikTok is limited in China? Kind of interesting, huh, that they've been manipulating, we find out in the news now, they've been manipulating algorithms to change things here in America. I know, that's a shock. Excellent. Boy, you Republicans, don't give me any of this self-aggrandizement. Oh, we want to control speech. Yeah, controlling speech is not always a bad thing. Online Safety Act that was co-authored, one of the top two people on this, was Connecticut U.S. Senator Richard Blumenthal. He, along with Republican Marsha Blackburn, two folks from decidedly opposite ends of the political spectrum, co-authoring a bill that passed in the Senate 91-3. How often does that happen, right? And is probably not going to get taken up by the House, maybe until after the election here, we don't know. A lot of people like this bill. You know, folks like myself who've been hosting shows like this have openly scowled, I do, at the lack of a spine that members of the House and Senate have had over years of actually doing something like this, and stuff like this has been done in other parts of the world, and they cower and they quiver under the guise and under the cover here of freedom of speech and free expression. Well, okay, you can say that, but one of my questions here, and I ended on the first hour on that, one of my questions here is how does the concept of freedom of speech intersect and work together with the wishes of a parent? When do we consider a minor, for example, to have freedom of speech? If that minor, for example, wants to go online and be open to and digest all of the slop and sleaze on the internet at 14 and 15 and 16 years old, should not the parents have some sort of availability to quash that and get some tools that they can use in concert with that under the guise of law, under the penalty of law from the major social media providers? Or is it all about just getting the info for the advertisers? Return visit right now from Quinnipiac University Assistant Professor of Interactive Media Design, John Powers, joining us, this right in his wheelhouse of expertise. Hey, John, good afternoon. It's Paul here. How are you, sir? Thanks for joining us.
Hi, Paul. Great to be with you again.
Well, it sounds like, John, and listen, I'm as big of a First Amendment guy as anybody there, but it sounds like, John, we may be halfway there, but we're already getting rumblings from the House and saying, hey, hold on here. And I'm reading about lawsuits and the ACLU and the same people that sued California when they tried to put age limits on violent video games. So as much as people think this is happening, it might not. What are your thoughts on all this?
I mean, as you said in your intro there, the fact that it passed the Senate 91-3 is certainly a positive sign that, as you mentioned, bipartisan support for something is almost unheard of or unthinkable in this day and age, especially in a year of a presidential election. The delay before it goes from the Senate to the House is, you know, as you mentioned, can be concerning. Things can happen. Political, you know, shenanigans can take place. Presidential politics can interfere. Mm-hmm. And so hopefully that doesn't happen.
You know, John, I'm reading all this sky is falling stuff from, and listen, with all due respect, there are some fine people in the ACLU and the Electronic Frontier Fund Foundation and all this. But again, you know, in society, is not society based on limits? And there are freedoms, but as a society, we limit things like, you know, the Second Amendment and all the amendments in the Constitution, and we have age limits on movies, and we have a parental permission for, you know, field trips and books they can take out of the, you know, out of the school library and age appropriate and all that. But boy, when it comes to this, John, I can imagine the lobbyists that'll be descending on the House on this.
There's a lot of money involved, and yes, so they're very powerful companies that will be fighting this for sure. And as you mentioned, there are all sorts of limits we have within a free society, as we already experience in this country. And that could be whether, you know, at a certain age you can't buy, you know, an energy drink at mm-hmm. Walmart because you're not old enough, or they'll check your ID, you know, all those sort of things, seatbelts and, you know, things we don't even think about anymore. And yet, you know, as you mentioned, many, many, many other countries, the European Union and so forth, have put in some of these restrictions to protect, you know, the most vulnerable in our society, the kids.
Yeah. And John, talk a little about that, because I do mention it, but this is your real area of expertise, obviously. The EU, and, you know, sometimes we Americans, you know, Europe, but they take this stuff a lot more seriously than we do in a lot of areas, right?
I mean, that's for sure. And, you know, sometimes we you know, look at China and say, well, of course they have restrictions. They're, you know, a much more a regimented, closed society and so forth. But the EU, just about a year ago, implemented, you know, a similar set of rules and regulations, which not only gave parents opportunities, you mentioned earlier, to you know, to be involved in what their kids may or may not be seeing on social media, but also put some serious responsibility on the tech companies for what you know, was ending up in front of the eyeballs of especially of young kids. And you know, it does go back to something we've talked about in the past when you and I have talked about TikTok and other mm-hmm. Similar things. Yes, all these regulations are going to would help for sure. And, you know, as it was presented to the Senate, you know, when you hear a story of some child who loses his life because of something directly related to social media, obviously it's a heartbreaking story. But you know, all of us, young and old, do need to improve our social media literacy, meaning understanding that what we see, we're not meant to ingest everything that comes across our, you know, our eyeballs. Mm-hmm. And we do need to have discretion about what is truth and what is not truth. And especially in this day and age of AI and deep fakes and all this sort of stuff.
Yeah, and John, I don't besmirch parents or guardians, but you know, John, I really think, and look, you're immersed in this. I here at the station, we all the hosts, we have station accounts, host accounts, and in social media, it's vital for all the media business, especially us in radio now. But I don't think, John, a lot of people really understand the capacity and the extent that these social media companies can go to with algorithms and this feedback loop of hooking people and young people who are not maybe mentally mature enough to say, hey, I got to take a break. I got to go out and take a walk, go play a little basketball or something. I mean, it's nasty, isn't it?
It's very, very smart people who have, for the sake of their own companies, have designed algorithms to keep people young and old. Mm. So I'll put myself in that category,
yeah.
To stay on their platforms as long as possible. So they can, you know, gather as much information about us, share that with advertisers. So some of the laws would prevent targeting of children with paid ads and that sort of thing. And yes, it's meant to be addictive. And you know, I think most of us fall into that category, young and old. This is something to help parents and youngsters, which we know the data is undeniable that social media can lead to some dangerous mental health issues, especially in the younger population.
And John, I can just see and hear the arguments now from the lobbyists. So listen, they get paid to do this. I understand. Well, of course we're targeting. Well, didn't you people get cereal commercials when you were watching Saturday morning cartoons? Right? Right? Can you? Right? And they're going to say, well, what's the difference? Right?
Yeah, the difference is, a television commercial back 30 years ago would target an age group that they knew was watching a particular program or a demographic, that was tuned in at that time of day. But now it's specific to me or to you or to that child. And, you know, what I have looked at, what I've spent time on, what I've responded to. They know everything. They know more about me than me.
Yeah.
And you know, their algorithm is just built to keep me there. And the infinite scroll also, you know, that the fact that the social media feed never ends and it just continually pops up new things that interest us, is exciting and fun. Mm-hmm. But also can be dangerous for sure.
Absolutely.
For lots of reasons.
Absolutely. And John, I will conclude this by freely admitting to you, I've been doom scrolling to see what the Yankees are doing today at the trade deadline. But that's really been my number one.
I've been doing the same for the Red Sox.
There you go. John Powers, a Quinnipiac University Assistant Professor of Interactive Media Design. John, thanks as always, and we'll chat down the road. Thanks.
Thank you, Paul. Appreciate it. Take care.
Appreciate it. Yeah. One other thing we're worried about is part of the insurance market here in the state, and in particular, policies and cost issues that are not being addressed as to one segment here of the insurance market in the state, which is tragic and ironic considering that Connecticut is still largely known as the insurance capital of the U.S., the small group insurance market, some say it's in a death spiral. There was a hearing in Hartford about that yesterday. Among the people to talk about that right now, Stratford GOP State Senator Kevin Kelly, who, of course, is on the insurance committee. Hey, Kevin, it's Paul. How are you?
Hey, Paul, I'm doing pretty well. Yourself?
Good, Kevin. Very well, thank you. I anticipated you might have some things to say on this because of the position you have in the General Assembly, the committee assignments, and what you see in your regular life as an attorney. Kevin, how is it that a state that jokingly is called by some people America's filing cabinet because of our deep roots with insurance in this state, how is it that we are having such a problem with the small group insurance market, which I would assume is causing a problem with some businesses and some individuals who just want to get decent insurance coverage? What's going on here?
Well, it, Paul, that is a very good question, because it's been more than 10 years. 10 years ago, the current majority in Hartford promised through the Affordable Care Act that we would have improved access, better quality, and most importantly, affordable health care. Unfortunately for working and middle-class families, that promise has never been delivered, despite the fact that the majority Democrats hold every single lever of political power at the state and federal level, so that if they wanted to bring relief, they could. And now you have, you know, one of their chairman of human services saying that healthcare is in a death spiral, and, you know, he can't figure it out because it's not happening nationally, despite the fact the Affordable Care Act is a national law that was implemented state by state. But the fact is, here in Connecticut, we have single party rule. The Democrats have all the power. We've put forward good ideas focused on bringing affordability to middle and working class families, such as reinsurance. Reinsurance was actually vetted, and that's an idea I came up with watching what other states do across the country. Mm-hmm. And we had it vetted twice, and it came back and said, yes, as a matter of fact, it works. Not only would it work, but it would reduce premiums by 30%, which to the average family of four would be a savings of about $6,000 a year, Paul. $6,000 a year. That's real money for hardworking families, and the Democrats stand in our way. The same thing with association health plans. They stood in the way of that so that small employers could give their workers the same benefit that larger employers like Sikorsky Aircraft give their employees. And this is what is it, there's just a disconnect between what the Democrats say and then what they do.
Yeah, and Kevin, let me stop you there because I want to get into this. The association healthcare plan thing. Kevin, that makes my head split crack. That drives me nuts. Other states, Kevin, as you said, with the reinsurance, other states do this. And to some large extent, it works. And, Kevin, I literally scream at the computer screen, which is a sight. You should see it. When I read the majority Democrats say, well, you know, we can't do anything that would hurt the Affordable Care Act exchanges when they know, as you say, reinsurance works. And these associated plans, I don't know, the Veterinaries Association, the Auto Body Shops Association, the Association of Hairdressers or whatever, they could pull their resources and get coverage, and yet it never gets done. I go nuts over it. I can imagine how maddening it must be for you and the guys and the gals in your caucus.
Well, it's why I'm bald, Paul, quite frankly. You know, I've pulled all my hair out because, you know, you mentioned it in what you were saying. It was pooling. Pooling is the whole underpinning of the Affordable Care Act, that if we put everybody in the pool, it lowers the cost. So if you put all the pizza joints, all the hairdressers, all the barbershops, all the small mom-and-pop shops up and down Main Street into one pool, they can leverage their numbers and get lower premiums because the pool would you know, level out
sure.
the cost. And so if this is the underpinning of that Affordable Care Act, why aren't the Democrats on board with it? This is what's so maddening, is that they're asking to do what the government wants people to do, and the Democrats are saying no. Instead, the Democrats are putting things like more Medicaid expansion out there, which when you do, and this is why Connecticut, this is not a national problem, because all states are not doing the same thing with Medicaid expansion. But when you put a person on Medicaid to pay their health care costs, which is a government payment program, it's the public option, if you will, it pays for a dollar worth of care by giving the provider 65 cents. So there's a 35% discount. That discount gets offset. Somebody's got to pick that up. And it's the people buying private insurance in both the individual and small group markets. So when they put somebody on Medicaid, small group and individual premiums are going to go up, even if the cost of medical care did not go up. And unfortunately for the small group, there's change there to give them, incentives and offsets So that's why the small group market is just disintegrating.
Yeah.
And that's
going
to hurt small business because they can't give their people that work for them the benefits of health insurance.
And we see, Kevin, these companies, listen, people can say what they want to about insurance companies. You and I know that. You deal with it in your regular line of work. You know, Kevin, they're not charities, and they've got it's got to be feasible for them to operate here in the state under the state insurance commissioner and the laws we have. Nobody's going to do this, Kevin, to take red ink on it. So we see these companies leave the small group market here. And you know, and I know, and I don't know too much about economics, but when there are fewer providers, there's less competition.
Yes. And, you know, and this less competition, less choice. I mean, it really reduces the choice of the types of insurance you can get. And this is, you know, doesn't work for Connecticut families. At the end of the day, the Connecticut family is paying more for their insurance and their health care. I mean, that's a whole nother issue that we need to look at, is get our arms as a state around the cost increases of medical care, like the Commonwealth of Massachusetts did. And, you know, I worked with Governor Lamont at starting this benchmark, is what we call it, benchmarking.
Yeah.
But we can be more robust. We need to do more work in this area, because if you can reduce the overall growth of medical costs, you can also reduce the premiums for the insurance that is the risk you're talking about that pays for that care.
Kevin, thank you. Appreciate it. And I hope once we get past this contentious election season, you guys and gals, and frankly, I'm sure there are Democrats who agree with it, too. This has to be brought up again, Kevin. I think the reinsurance and, of course, the association plans, until at least we can do this on an experimental basis. So hopefully you guys and gals can do that once we get past the elections. Kevin Kelly, Republican State Senate member, Stratford. Kevin, thank you. Appreciate the time.
Well, thank you, Paul. Take care.
Take care. Kevin Kelly there. Every Tuesday at this time, first break in the 5 o'clock hour, Megan Portfolio joins us from the Yankee Institute. She herself writes the Hartford Portfolio, and she is here once again. Megan, good afternoon. How are you?
Good afternoon, sir. I'm doing well.
Everything good in your life?
Everything's perfect.
Good, good.
Can you hear me?
Good. Oh, yeah. You're fine. Now, usually, though, there is something that is burning in your gut, although your life is going well. There, every week at this time, there's something you're not happy with. So inform us, please, if they read the Hartford Portfolio, my fine listeners at the Yankee Institute, what are you covering for us this week?
Oh, well, first, I'm genuinely happy. It's just every time the government opens its mouth, it makes me unhappy.
All right, so you're genuinely, and so am I. You know, everybody thinks we're cranky, Megan. We're not. We're actually more fun-loving than people on the other side of the aisle. But I digress. So what's going on?
Oh, so there's more talks of a special session happening. But this time, conveniently, right before the November elections, and it's to bring up these two dopey bills that just, like, they just can't get over it. The first was the governor's climate bill, which is SB 11. And one of the bad things about that is the bill would force us to adopt all these new building codes, like, immediately, which obviously adds to the cost of housing, which, according to the General Assembly, we're in a crisis.
Okay.
So why are we trying to implement things that increase, you know, the cost of housing? The National Builders Association says in Connecticut, for every $1,000 that increases in the median cost of the home, 914 people are priced out of it. So you want to add more of these regulations, and what all you're doing is just pricing people out of that, you know, that dream of owning that first home.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one of them. And then the other one is the green monster. It just won't die already.
Now, wait a minute. Now, hold it. So this would happen, and correct me if I'm wrong, Megan, please, because you're more up on this than I am. So would there be any sort of public comment or public hearing on this or not?
No. And at this point, we don't even know which iteration of these bills they would put forth, because there were so many. Like, when they first came out, there were so many regulations and ban this, ban that. So I don't know if they're talking about, you know, the first rendition, the final rendition. No, it would be a special session, so there would be no additional public input. It's just, it's typical. This is how we do business now. It's like, whatever, we'll do what we want. Like, look with the Democrat primary. You know, the voters elected someone that they wanted to, you know, run for president. Mm-hmm. And now all of a sudden we're, you know, forced to deal with what we're dealing with. She didn't win any vote. So we just do things that makes us feel good, like with the striking workers bill. Oh, well, we don't need a public hearing on this. We'll just go ahead and just do what we want. And this is another example of it. This is not an emergency. Session starts in January. You mean to tell me we have to vote on these two bills in 2 months?
Yeah, and that's the thing, you know, Megan, because I'm trying to figure this out. It's a blue state, especially when it comes to policies like that. We get it. We understand it. So it's not like waiting 2 months is going to drastically change things. The only thing I can think of, Megan, would it be, and have you thought this at all, is this an effort by some of the more progressive elements of the Democratic Party to save themselves on Election Day, which I would find odd, but this is right before the election, so it would still take a while to come up. Are there members of the Democratic caucus worried that they may lose support if they don't do this or not? What's the thinking behind this?
I'm thinking that, well, that's probably half of it, as I'm sure, you know, I'm positive because I see all the emails and mm-hmm. social media posts. The advocates are really, they're not happy because it's been multiple years that legislation that they've wanted passed has just died and they haven't really gotten anything. And so, yeah, there's been a huge, I'm sure the emails are not very nice that mm-hmm. they're sending, but yeah, there's a huge push on that. But then there's also a handful of lawmakers that are really in support of this, like Christine Palm. I mean, she's the architect of the Green Monster. She called it her swan song on the debate floor. So, I mean, she's not running for re-election again. So, I mean, this would be her legacy. So it's like, are we putting legacy and what people think of us ahead of, you know, constituents and what's right for the state? So I'm sure it's a little bit of that, too, because, I mean, they're not held accountable anymore. I mean, the voters overwhelmingly are very cautious on some of this environmental stuff, especially when you're talking about increasing, you know, our already high electric rates. Mm. So, I mean, I'm sure it's half of some of what you said, but mm-hmm. I think it's also a lot of the lawmakers who aren't running anymore were really, when they were campaigning, were all about the environment and they got nothing passed. And so, you know how it is with these politicians and their legacy.
and again, the guest is Megan Portfolio from the Yankee Institute and the Hartford Portfolio blog. Yeah, I mean, Megan, listen, I'm okay with anything that is debated and passed in the structured process we have for this. This is not an emergency. We don't need to do this quick, 2 or 3 days at 2 o'clock in the morning. This can wait. And again, wait for the new session. It is the longer session. They'll have plenty of time to do this, and it'll be on CTN. Lord knows you know that. And everybody will be able to watch it. Or maybe is that what they're afraid of? Do they not want to do it that way?
Oh yes. I mean, you know what it's like during the final weeks coming up to an election. You're inundated with phone calls and mailers, people coming hassling you at your door. Like, you know, school just started. So there's a lot going on in, you know, normal people's lives. And yeah, this is something that can just be easily, you know, put under the radar and passed. But I want to give Christine Palm some credit.
Okay.
Because she really was not happy with the last special session that was called in June mm-hmm. when they introduced one of these emergency certified omnibus bills. She publicly came out and said that she was opposed to having these kind of bills put forth in this kind of a session. Mm. It really isn't fair to the lawmakers, because if you have a bill and maybe you do agree with some of the stuff, but then there's other things on there that are going to increase utility rates, like, what am I supposed to do? Am I supposed to vote no, or am I supposed to vote yes? Because half the bill I like, half the bill I hate. It's like you're putting people in a really terrible position, and it's lazy lawmaking. Podunkery is what I call it.
Yeah. I like that. Podunkery. You're right. I call it sloppy. It's slop. It's legislative slop. You know, you and I have heard from probably a lot of the same people in the General Assembly who say, hey, I was half asleep with pizza and Gatorade, and I got the budget bill at 1 o'clock in the morning, and it's 900 pages. I mean, come on. That's a disgrace to the legislative process here in the state. But, Megan, it happens every year, sometimes twice a year, if there's a special session. It's mind-boggling.
And I'm not going to stop yelling about it, and I hope I'm not boring your listeners with talking about some of this stuff over and over again, but we need to put an end to this. Like, things need to be – there's a way to do things appropriately, and that's what they need to do. Enough with this just, oh, we're just going to do what we want to do because we're the majority party, and what are you going to do about it? Well, you know what? You're going to start making people mad as I am, and something will be done about it, and you will no longer be in that seat, hopefully, because this is no way to run a state, absolutely no way to pass laws. There's a process in place. It works. It's worked before I was even born, before mm-hmm. you were born, not even a couple centuries ago. Or am I doing my math right? Yeah, a couple centuries ago. It's late in the day, and I've had too much coffee.
It's okay.
But no, you introduce a bill, you have a public hearing, you listen mm-hmm. to what the people have to say, and you're transparent. None of this, oh, we're going to sneak it in before elections. No, this is, don't play games with constituents. Don't play games with the state. Don't play games with our tax dollars. Mm-hmm. That's really too much to ask.
Megan Portfolio writes the Hartford Portfolio blog with the Yankee Institute. Megan, thank you. Have a happy week, and we'll check with you next week. Thank you.
All right. See you, Paul.
All right. Bye-bye. Megan Portfolio there.